Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson. This week, we're talking about guns and what's happening, more like what's not happening, I should say, with gun bills both pro and anti alike in the Statehouse and in Congress. Are you interested? Well, I hope so. It is, after all, why we named this podcast the South Carolina Lead, spelled L-E-D-E, harkening back to the old school spelling for the introductory section of a news story, intended to entice the reader to read the full article. And we hope you listen to all four sections of our podcast for news, insight, campaign updates, and some trivia at the end. Subscribe to us and enjoy our weekly podcast. Perhaps as you cruise down Ocean Boulevard in Myrtle Beach in your lifted pickup truck on your way to a live-action pirate dinner, or as you quizzically look at your monthly SC&G electric bill. And now, Quorum Call. Quorum Call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Starting off number one, Greenville Republican Representative Jason Elliott is asking that there be no further indictments of elected officials after the candidate filing deadline on March 30th. Elliott tweeted out a letter he sent to Special Prosecutor David Pasco, who was leading the ongoing Statehouse investigation. He stressed his concerns about special election costs and the erosion of confidence any indictments will cause. The investigation, however, remains ongoing. Number two, the Medical University of South Carolina fired 13 employees in 2017 after determining that they misused patient records. The Post and Courier reports that there were a total of 58 privacy breaches during that year. 11 were characterized as employees snooping, sometimes on high-profile patients. MUSC has identified 307 breaches and fired 30 employees dating back to 2013, including the ones last year. None of those were physicians. And speaking of firing, South Carolina's Public Health Agency said Friday that an employee had been fired after posting a profanity-laced message critical of President Donald Trump on Twitter in the wake of the Florida shooting that left 17 dead. A tweet posted Wednesday from the Department of Health and Environmental Control's official account called Trump a bleeping tool, but he didn't say bleeping. Now, an agency spokesman told the Associated Press last Friday that the employee had intended to post the message from a personal Twitter account and had sent it using the agency account instead, a violation of internal policy. And rounding out Quorum Call, all South Carolina teachers would get a raise and none would make less than $32,000 a year under a budget plan tentatively agreed to Wednesday by House budget writers. According to the Post and Courier, state employees and teachers would not pay more for healthcare premiums under the budget plan, though they would pay slightly more out of pocket for copayments and deductibles. The budget recommendations also provide a 2% pay bump for classroom teachers statewide when the fiscal year starts July 1st. Ah, bleep, we buried the lead again. With the most recent school shooting in Florida, our big discussion this week is obviously on guns. And to talk about that, we have two Post and Courier Statehouse reporters, Jamie Lovegrove and Joe Craney. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thanks for having
us,
Kevin.
There are approximately 40 bills floating around the Statehouse dealing with guns. They include gun reform measures to strengthen background checks and banning folks on terrorist watch lists from purchasing guns, to pro-gun measures that allow for open carry of guns and allow for some to carry on school grounds and church property, two places that have seen gun violence in South Carolina over the past few years. With several bills floating around, seemingly something for everyone, there is one thing nearly all these bills have in common. They're stalled. The Republican-controlled legislature has discussed, voted on, and moved some bills, but for better or worse, not much has happened besides lots of newspaper ink, rhetoric, and gridlock. But a trip down memory lane shows that the only gun legislation South Carolina has passed in recent years has been reforms to existing law. That big change came in 2015 with the strengthening of South Carolina's criminal domestic violence statute. The CDV law prohibits those convicted of criminal domestic violence from possessing firearms for several years or, in some cases, life. Those subject to CDV protection orders can also lose their Second Amendment right. All this because South Carolina is one of the worst states for domestic violence, though that is slowly changing. Now jump to last week, when Governor Henrik Master said he wants lawmakers to send him a bill arming teachers. Two bills have gone nowhere in the House and Senate that would do something like that. They are both named after Jacob Hall, the 6-year-old Townville Elementary School student who was shot and killed at school in September 2016. However, we saw some movement in the Senate last week on a bill S-431, moving through a Senate Judiciary Subcommittee to the full committee. Now, this bill would make it a crime to threaten school violence with a weapon. Another bill in that subcommittee was dealing with expedited reporting to background check databases and is being heard again this week. We're going to start off with first-timer Joe Craney from the Post and Courier. Joe, what's going on in the Senate and what bills are working through the Senate specifically, and where we think things are going so far?
There were two bills that received a Senate hearing last week having to do with gun legislation. One was from Senator Greg Gregory. He's a Lancaster Republican. That would require speedier updates to the state's background check system. And there was another bill that actually advanced through a Senate Judiciary Committee subcommittee from Senator Sandy Senn. She's a Republican from Charleston. And her bill would make it a crime for someone to even threaten to commit gun violence at schools. As it currently stands, when someone posts on social media or tells a friend that they're going to shoot up a school tomorrow, law enforcement says that they don't really have a law on the books that really fits that crime. So the bill from Senator Senn is attempting to address that with a bill that would make it a misdemeanor punishable by up to 3 years in jail for even threatening to commit gun violence in schools.
Did you get the vibe that this could get through full committee and then get to the Senate floor at some point and maybe make it over to the House?
I think Senator Senn is optimistic. She says that her colleagues in the Senate are willing and able to support law enforcement and that this is a bill aimed at supporting law enforcement. I think you're kind of looking at a three-tiered system here of gun-related legislation. On the far end of the spectrum is restricting access to assault rifles, which a couple of lawmakers have introduced legislation doing that. The middle ground is reforming the background check system. And then I think the place where I think there is the most common ground is bills that would address school safety.
And the governor, like we said, Governor McMaster was asking for a bill dealing with arming teachers. Is there any traction? Or, I mean, I know there's some legislation out there floating around, but hasn't gone anywhere. Is anyone even talking about that? And from what you've been hearing around the State House, Joe?
There was bills like that introduced in the past that didn't go anywhere. In the wake of the Parkland shooting, there was a new bill introduced by Representative Phil Lowe, from Republican from Florence. This would be similar to other measures, permitting local school districts to arm a teacher or other school employees. It could be a teacher, it could be a janitor, it could be a football coach. His bill would permit school boards to review an application from an employee to be allowed to have a concealed weapon on a school campus. A requirement for that was that they would already have to have a concealed weapons permit. So this is someone who's already gone through a background check and would be lawfully able and licensed to carry a gun in South Carolina. So it's not like a requirement to arm every K through 12 teacher. It would be a structure that would allow a school employee or a teacher to carry a gun if they want one. So I think that is a concept that has support certainly among some Republicans in the State House, but to your point earlier, those measures have come up previously and they haven't really gone anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that we have McMaster talking about arming teachers when one of his budget proposals was to put an SRO, a school resource officer, to at least have one in every school, in every county, in every district in the state, especially, a lot of schools already have these SROs in place, but the rural districts are the ones that maybe don't have the resources, in fact, to get them in there. So it's interesting to hear him go from that to, okay, let's get armed teachers in there, when SROs was kind of where he started from. I'm guessing maybe SROs and getting them to all the school districts is probably a little more plausible at this point than arming teachers, because there's so much of a debate more over that than SROs in schools.
Yeah, he made his position pretty clear, I think, when he said, give me a bill that allows teachers to be armed. I think he would support that, and he would certainly support SROs. It was interesting also last week that the State Department of Education announced a statewide review of local school safety policies. That would include active shooter drills. It might include the idea that we might install metal detectors at South Carolina schools, which is another proposal that was introduced by a lawmaker last week at the State House. And it could certainly include SROs, whether that becomes a state mandate or not. Schools are free to pay for them and install them locally now. Whether or not the state government wants to mandate that, I think, is another issue that could come up.
Especially when we talk about mandates and then unfunded mandates and how that works out, because, you know, this all costs money, especially, I know, I think you're talking about Representative Gilliard's bill with the school metal detectors, and that's not cheap to put all that in there, but still working through. Jamie, you want to say something about this?
I would just say it's important to remember, of course, in the Parkland situation in particular, that as we've learned over the last couple of weeks, there was an officer there, and he stood outside. You know, some students have defended him and said, you know, who would want to stare down the barrel of an AR-15? You've kind of had some of a sort of a role reversal in some ways, and the conservatives, you know, that often cast themselves as the big defenders of law enforcement officers, if some of them have labeled him kind of a coward. But it just goes to show that, you know, even when you have some of those measures in place, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to be able to avoid these kind of situations.
Yeah, and that's interesting to bring that up, because I have a fraternal twin brother. I know there's two of me running around out there, but we're fraternal, so that's for everyone's sake. And he is actually a Metro Transit police officer in Washington, D.C., and it's always good to talk with him, especially when these situations come up, because it gives you such a different perspective, you know, in all kinds of shootings. And, you know, he kind of expressed that kind of regret about how that officer acted, because he's like, you know, he has a plan if there's ever a shooting situation anywhere he goes. Like, he's prepared, and if that happens, I mean, that's the oath you take when you swear to defend the Constitution and serve and protect. So it has been an interesting kind of dialogue about how people are approaching that. You know, I mean, you don't know until you're in that situation, but I think it does yield a lot of different questions. But Jamie, I'm glad you talked about that, because we saw some activity down in Florida with those students, those kids who have been shot at, who were through that process. We've seen them attacked. We've seen them praised. I mean, they're still persevering, essentially, going through this process and really laying down the hammer on some of those lawmakers and senators down there. We saw them talking with Senator Rubio about, you know, receiving donations from the National Rifle Association. Are we seeing anything, any kind of pressure like that here in South Carolina with our lawmakers, both, you know, congressional or at the state level?
Certainly not to that degree. I mean, it has been remarkable to see just how much pressure has been put on Florida lawmakers and how successful it's been. I mean, to see Governor Rick Scott, of all people, who has just been ardently opposed to any of these kind of measures in the past, now saying that he would support some of these and flying in the face of the NRA, and the NRA saying, we're going to come after you if you do this. I mean, they've been pretty open about it. If you turn your back on us, Florida lawmakers, Florida Republicans, who we helped elect, we're going to come after you. But they are still charging ahead with that. You know, we're certainly not seeing, for obvious reasons, quite the same level of personal effort taken in South Carolina. But there has certainly been strong movement, and we've still seen a lot of the same activist groups that have mobilized over the last year and a half since Trump took office, playing a big role in that. You know, you've seen the indivisible groups and groups like that really pushing for measures. And we'll see this march, the Florida national march that the Florida students have called for next month as well. On the national level and with the congressional delegation, you know, again, this is a delegation that is, you know, very strong supporters of the Second Amendment. We saw Senator Tim Scott and Representative Trey Gowdy last week on Face the Nation, both kind of, you know, maintaining their distance from taking really aggressive measures. Trey Gowdy said that he would talk to leadership about the bump stock ban. He said he wasn't sure what had happened with that and kind of deflected responsibility for it, but said he'd have a conversation with leadership about it. Senator Scott has long been a big supporter of a bill called the Fix Nix Act, which would improve the background check system and try to shore up some of the problems that we've seen there. And what we have seen, Politico is reporting today, that President Trump is really eager to do something right now. He really wants to be seen like he is on top of it. He has been talking to lawmakers, according to Politico, about getting something done this week. Very, very, very unlikely that anything like that would happen. For one thing, the House is only scheduled to be in session one day this week. Yeah. But clearly he sees the optics of this and he wants to get on top of it right now.
Speaking of President Trump, you know, he did kind of come out last week and say that about assault rifles, you know, raising that age limit. I think they said 21. Todd Rutherford, the House Minority Leader here in South Carolina, the day before about or thereby came out and said, you know, he introduced a bill doing the same thing, but raising it to the age 20 because he thought 21 was kind of an arbitrary number. He just doesn't want someone of high school age essentially to be able to get access to a gun. I mean, you can go and get this gun. I mean, it's not that hard to do, essentially. Is that something I know you know Todd Rutherford pretty well, too, Jamie, and his approach. And he even said, we were talking to him last week, and he's a gun owner. He has an AR-15 himself.
Absolutely.
We were talking earlier. Does that give some credibility, some weight to this bill that he's trying to get through and raising the age limit to 20?
As much as a Democrat can have. You know, certainly he is not your stereotypical Democrat in that sense. He is, you know, proud gun owner, and, you know, won't even tell us how many he owns, but he has, you know, in the past, he had an A-minus rating from the NRA on his voting record, which is not hugely uncommon in South Carolina among Democrats. There are quite a few Democrats that are pretty strong gun rights supporters, but it does lend him a little more credibility. Whether it'll be enough to push a measure like that through in a Republican-dominated legislature, I think remains to be seen. But it's better than having some firebrand progressive coming out and proposing it.
Yeah. And then, Joe, just kind of going back to, we're going to hear from that bill, S-516, this week. It's a Greg Gregory's bill, and I don't know if you caught his speech on the Senate floor the week before. It was the day after the Parkland shooting. This guy's a Republican. He's from Lancaster. He's really a straight shooter in a sense, where he doesn't really mince words, and he says what he means. He doesn't get too over-the-top animated, but when he says something, it's kind of remarkable when he does. And he just kind of came out and said, you know, thoughts and prayers are not enough at these days. And that's kind of what you're hearing from these kids down in Florida, too. But it was remarkable to hear him say it from the Senate and saying that we need to do something. And it's kind of like these small steps, though. I mean, this is just, you would think it'd be kind of a bipartisan support for this bill to make it easier, make it quicker for these background checks to go through and be reported. So are we going to see maybe that bill move this week, you think?
They're going to have another meeting, another hearing on that bill in the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee. I think Senator Greg Gregory is kind of a fascinating subject of this debate. On the Senate floor, he said God is not listening the day after the Parkland shooting. He was a member of the Special Gun Rights Committee that was impaneled after the Charleston AME shooting a couple of years ago. He, I think, represents a section of the State House of lawmakers who want some kind of gun reform and who feel, I don't want to say hopeless, but a certain level of angst at what they saw in the wake of the Charleston AME shooting when there was no gun laws, new gun laws passed. Despite this effort to impanel this special committee, they toured the state. They had four public hearings where they heard from people throughout the state who wanted some kind of legislation enacted, and nothing was done. As part of this speedier updates to criminal reporting bill that he is sponsoring, there is a separate part that would delay the waiting period for background checks from 3 to 5 days. This is another issue in South Carolina. It goes back a couple of years. Another member of the Special Gun Committee, Senator Gerald Malloy, wanted to extend that to 28 days, and that bill hasn't gone anywhere. I think the part of Gregory's bill that would extend the background check to 5 days is actually the most controversial part of that bill.
Yeah, it seems like during that hearing, they were worried about that part.
It was Senator Kimpson from North Charleston who was questioning him about that, and Senator Malloy, who actually suggested that 5 days doesn't go far enough, and he's the one who wants it to go to 28 days. I think there's a possibility that that part of the bill will be removed, and that Gregory, in order for some reform to pass, he might move forward with a bill that just requires this quicker update to the South Carolina background check database.
And that's dealing with the Charleston loophole there. That's how Dylan Roof was able to get a gun, because his background check was kind of inconclusive. And after 3 days, if you don't get a yay or a nay from the FBI, nix then you can go ahead with the purchase at the discretion of the gun seller. So he went ahead and got that. And that was a big thing that they had been trying to close, the Charleston loophole. And still, even by extending it from 3 days to 5 days, is still kind of a controversy in its own sense. Malloy definitely wants to expand it more because he says, you know, we should give it as much time as it needs until we can get a accurate ruling on whether someone should be able to buy a gun or not.
Senator Kimson says, forget the waiting period. Don't let the gun sale go until the background check is complete. Until you get word from the FBI that this person is cleared, that's when you can sell them the gun. That's what some senators and some lawmakers want.
And to be fair, with them not passing any gun reforms after the shooting, the Confederate flag coming down was a big, I don't want to say compromise because it wasn't a compromise in a sense. It was just...
It attracted all the focus.
Yeah, it was the big draw. Yeah. And after that, it was like, we're not taking up monuments anymore. Right. We're not. I mean, there was just all that political goodwill was done. And but it got done. And that was what they wanted. Wrapping up here, we have never done a prediction on this show, but I'm I'm wondering if we can make predictions.
Pundit time.
We're going to look into our crystal ball here at South Carolina Public Radio and ETV and ask our guests, do you all see, Jamie, Joe, do you see anything coming out of the Statehouse this year? Is it a possibility? I mean, and I already know that we're already stopped up with stuff because of SCANA and SCNG and Dominion and the nuclear debacle, but is there any ability to get a gun bill?
I mean, I think that's an important point that you made there, that they are so focused on some of these other big issues right now. They're so focused on the nuclear issue. There are a lot of things that have kind of gotten thrown to the wayside. I mean, ethics reform was a big topic of conversation going into this session. You know, we're deep into this State House corruption probe, and everyone's talking about how we're going to do something about this, and we're going to make these ethics laws tighter, and absolutely nothing has moved forward there to this point, to the great chagrin of a few lawmakers like Gary Clary, a Republican from up in Clemson. You know, there's just a limited bandwidth in the State House, and until they can clear some space to do this, and unless the focus really, you know, that'll be a big question, is do some of these students, do some of these activists really maintain focus on the issue? If they do, then maybe, you know, in April, maybe in May, as we're getting towards the end of the session, they can get something done. But, you know, it's going to have to be a very sustained effort.
Mm-hmm. Joe, what do you think?
I think Gregory's bill to require speedier background checks has a pretty steep climb. But I do think a couple of things could pass. The bill to commission a study of installing metal detectors at school entrances. This is from Representative Gilliard that we mentioned earlier. The idea that we need to make our schools safer is a fairly bipartisan idea. In addition to Senator Senn's bill that would make it a crime to threaten gun violence at school, I think those two measures could be passed this session. Bump stocks, I think there could be support for that, although it might be a moot point considering President Trump's direction to the Department of Justice to, I guess, start a process to ban
those. Yeah, he sort of backed away a little bit, and he's obviously conflicted with his Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, quite a few times, and maybe he'll blame him if something doesn't get done. But he did at least take the step of asking for it.
I think the most interesting bill to watch will be Rutherford's under 20 ban on AR-15s. Mm-hmm. This was the specific point that Florida Governor Rick Scott came out in support for. This might be the thing that comes out of the Parkland shooting. High school teenagers should not be able to buy semi-automatic assault weapons. That's what some people believe. And it could be something that South Carolina, you know, follows in the footsteps of Florida in passing that.
A lot to watch. Again, like we said, we're almost, I think, halfway through, or almost getting close to the end. I mean, May is creeping up on us.
Flying by.
And the budget's going through, and that really slows everything down, too. So,
and election season hasn't even ramped up yet.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, once filing, candidate filings next month, and once that wraps up, I mean, it's going to be a lot of eyes.
Well, and that's another factor, too. I mean, you work in, you know, you really have to kind of play it safe for some of these guys.
That's the big thing. A lot of these folks are running in Republican primaries. They have candidates challenging them from their right, no matter how conservative they are.
Yeah.
That's an issue.
And then we'll probably see some solidification of people's opinions, maybe if these gun bills do move forward and the filing's already closed, you don't have a challenger, or you have one that you think you can win. You might start seeing some more opinions becoming solidified and maybe some action happening after then. So definitely stay tuned. Definitely keep listening to the South Carolina Lead and reading the Post and Courier, where our esteemed guests are from, Jamie Love Grove and Joe Craney. Guys, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Evan.
Now let's hit the old dusty campaign trail to bring you up to speed on news regarding statewide political campaign activity. Now let's keep with our discussion of guns from earlier as we look at two Democrats vying for governor and a feud that has spun up over the National Rifle Association and the mass shooting in Parkland, Florida from the other week. Democratic candidate Phil Noble last week accused his opponent, Columbia Democratic Representative James Smith, of being too pro-gun. He said Smith has voted over and over again with the NRA, getting A ratings, and now tries to fool people that he is on the right side of this issue. However, when the Associated Press questioned Noble about his voting record, Noble said that he supported 2014 Democratic gubernatorial candidate Vincent Shaheen, even though Shaheen had gotten an A rating from the NRA 2 years earlier and supported a guns and bars bill. Looks like the Associated Press caught Phil Noble there saying one thing but doing another. But political observers say Democrats vying for statewide office need a mix of stances to help them win moderates in the general election. Now, Smith's campaign called Noble's move a desperate attempt to play politics with a national tragedy. Noble came back and added that Smith doesn't get to cry crocodile tears over a national tragedy that he's been helping enable. Lots of back and forth there, as always, on the campaign trail. But that's what we're here for, to keep you updated on what they're saying and what they're doing. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of state politics or government. We named this section after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other on the House or Senate floor. Now, did you know that all 124 state House representative seats are up for re-election this year? Did you even know that there are 124 state House representatives? Well, there are. Filing opens March 16th and closes March 30th. Now, these seats come up for re-election every 2 years, while the 46 state Senate seats come up every 4 years. Such election years can prompt big legislative action or inaction, as we've seen in the past. Now, do you know what district you're in or who your representative is? Well, you can easily find out at scstatehouse.gov. Now, as far as political makeup of the South Carolina House of Representatives, Republicans took control of the House in 1994 and have since solidified their control. Democrats control 44 seats and Republicans hold 80. That's a vote difference of 36. However, there is currently one vacancy, District 69 in Lexington County, which was previously occupied by former Representative Rick Quinn. You might remember Quinn, who pled guilty to a misconduct in office charge last December as part of the ongoing Statehouse corruption probe. That district is still a solid Republican lock, and Republicans don't foresee any substantial swing in Statehouse control anytime soon. The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Watch my Statehouse video recaps every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, live at 7 p.m. on SCETV's Facebook, YouTube, and my Twitter account at Gavin Jackson. You can read the Statehouse Daybook on SCETV.org, also on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, to find out what's going on at the Statehouse. And listen to coverage on South Carolina Public Radio. All of that, this podcast, and more, is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and scpublicradio.org. Now subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you find podcasts. Email questions, comments, story ideas, problems you have with my pronunciation, or any other gripes to scled@scetv.org. Now follow us on Instagram, where we post photos from the studio and from around the Statehouse, including some of my great selfies that, I don't know, I might delete because they're not that cute. But the South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our coordinating producer. Our executive producer is Tom Posey. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on February 26, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening, and remember to keep washing your hands. Please like my selfies.